Books with Aaron, Polly, and Wayne, and maybe Andrew later on. I'm Aaron.
This is Paul.
This is Wayne.
This is maybe Andrew later on.
Man, that is a spot on impersonation of Andrew.
Oh, wow. Yeah, I thought he was on already. That's crazy.
Yeah, I thought this is like Rich Little right here on the show. Just saying.
Rich Little. Deep cuts. I'm finally experiencing what it is to be you guys right now and recording at 8 a.m. in the morning on a Saturday.
Oh, because you're Central Time Paul.
I'm Central. Well, yeah. I'm not normally Central Time Paul. I live in Michigan, which is still East Coast time, at least where I live. But I'm currently in the Central Time Zone. I'm in Chicago.
Chicago. What are you doing in Chicago?
Well, last night I saw that musician, The Weeknd, in concert.
Oh, yeah. I like The Weeknd.
Oh, it was such a good show. So fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it looks like he puts on a good show.
Oh, yeah. He played at a football stadium. So it was like, 40,000 people or 50,000 people. It was a lot of people. It was a great show. The show was, it's a pop star show, right? Yeah. So it's not like you're just going and seeing some dude up there with a guitar or a band. You're seeing flames and fireworks and costumed performers and like a dystopian city backdrop, and they had like a giant statue of a woman in the middle of the stage that would like rotate and shoot beams out of its eyes. It was something to behold. But it was an awesome show. I'm recording at 8 o'clock like you normies over here in the Central Time Zone.
Yeah, look at you. Are you gonna get yourself some of that deep dish pie?
I hope so. That's the plan. Yeah. I mean, why wouldn't you? I mean, what else other than The Weeknd is there to be in Chicago for?
God, so I'd like to be some of that Chicago pizza.
Beef sandwiches.
I love Chicago, but I've usually been for work. So all the things I really want to do, most of them during the week close before I could ever possibly go do them. But I will love Chicago. There's so much to do there.
There's the Field Museum. There's the Shedd Aquarium.
Oh, guys.
The Museum of Industry and Science.
It's sometime Andrew.
It's sometime Andrew. Part-time Andrew.
Actually, there is another reason. There is something I'm doing today, and it just occurred to me. Because you guys are like, oh, Chicago, blah, blah, blah. I do love Chicago. I will say the last time I was here was in 2019 for Star Wars Celebration. And I was, that was when I was there when they launched the trailer for The Rise of Skywalker. Fond memory. But what I'm doing today is I'm going to the Griffin Museum of Science and Industry. Because
that
they
is an incredible museum.
Oh, good. Well, they're actually an amazing museum because they are going to have a Spider-Man exhibit.
Oh yeah, I've seen images from that. Yeah,
Beyond Amazing, the exhibition. It features like movie props, classic comic books. It's like everything Spider-Man, and I'm gonna go check it out today. Actually,
will you be shooting video for the channel?
If they allow it, then yes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes these museum exhibits don't, but I certainly plan to.
I would have to pick the week and actually go up there just to see that exhibit. Because when I was there, the exhibit they had was Pixar. And it was all of the, here's how Pixar does their magic. And just like a huge exhibit of the technology, the process, videos.
Oh, wow. That sounds fun.
It was really cool.
Well, Marvel's Spider-Man Beyond Amazing, the exhibition, is currently open and is open through February 8th, 2026. So you got time.
Yeah, I will definitely get up there. I can do Chicago as a weekend trip.
Yeah. Is it about 5 hours from St. Louis?
Yeah, depending on how you drive, it's anywhere from 4 to 6 hours.
Makes me wonder if Wayne's a little closer to the 4 hour.
If he's got plans, maybe. If he's got Spider-Man waiting at the end of that drive.
He takes the spider buggy.
I actually took the train once. That was a really nice train ride between St. Louis and Chicago, except the train stops at every station, so it takes the full 6 hours for that.
It is not an express line.
No, not at all.
Well, I'm jealous, Polly, of your weekend in Chicago. I am just here at home taking care of the dogs. A single single dog father that I am.
A dog father.
The dog father. Oh, I like that. The dog father.
Well, quiet. When you're in your 40s, quiet weekends at home are things you're jealous of, too. So
That's true.
Like,
that's,
oh, that sounds so nice.
Yeah, do you find actually that no matter what you're doing, the other thing sounds better? Like, if you have something like really busy or big plans, you're like, God, I wish I was just home. And then when you have like, when you're just at home, you're like, God, I wish I was out doing something. Is it just me?
No. Well, like when you're out at a concert and you're like, oh, I'm thinking about my couch right now and I miss it.
Generally, if I were out at a concert these days, I'd be thinking, man, there's too many people here.
Right?
There were a lot of people there last night. It was very loud.
I'd rather be at home watching something on streaming.
In my jammies.
That's actually a good segue into Captain America Brave New World, because both you and Aaron at the start of this podcast said that you've revisited that recently. Is it on Disney Plus or something?
It is. It hit Disney Plus this week.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah, and I watched it this morning instead of watching cartoons when I ate my Fruit Loops. I watched Brave New World, and I got to tell you,
about 50% of it is animated, so I think you're good.
I enjoyed it in the theater. I enjoyed it at home. I think I enjoyed it at home more, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah,
but I got a kick out of it. I thought it was time well spent.
Yeah, in my case, my wife wasn't up to going to the theater with me back when it first came out, so it was her first time watching it. And I have to say, it holds up. It's not one of the best Marvel movies, but it is a solid.
It's a solid B.
Yeah, higher middle of the road.
Yeah,
and I enjoyed watching it after having recently done Thunderbolts too.
Yeah,
Thunderbolts is right there too. A solid high B.
Yeah, I would say Thunderbolts is a B+, whereas Brave New World's a B. But I enjoyed both of them. I'm looking forward to watching Thunderbolts on Disney Plus as well. But the thing that I find interesting about Brave New World is, you know, the Celestial Island. You know, hearkening back to the Eternals, a movie which I barely remember other than my disdain for it. So.
Yeah, I mean, that's the worst thing about Brave New World is it reminds you that, you know,
that there was an Eternals movie. Yeah.
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 It did force me to finally watch Eternals, though.
Yeah.
Like, now I just need something to force me to watch the Marvels. But I feel like I have to watch that before Secret Wars anyway.
I would say the Marvels is also a solid B.
Yeah, I'd agree.
I'd give it maybe a B-, but
I agree.
It was fun. I mean,
yeah.
If they hadn't had Ms. Marvel, you know, Kamala Khan, it would not have made it to a B-.
True.
I think she really is the heart of that movie. And I think that actress really nails the role.
Yeah, I've continued to watch the Marvel MCU, and I'm up through Avengers. So I'm watching in the order that they hypothetically occur in their the fantasy timeline. And I got to say, rewatching The Incredible Hulk with Ed Norton, I mean, I love Mark Ruffalo, but man, Ed Norton was such a good Bruce Banner.
And I rewatched that recently, and you know, I mean, don't get me wrong, I do like Mark Ruffalo, and I don't mind Mark Ruffalo in that role. But yeah, I actually think Ed Norton was better in the role.
He's a lot edgier.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I was going to say, Mark Ruffalo is very much a funny Bruce Banner and comic relief Bruce Banner, where Ed Norton very much has kind of the tragedy of Bruce Banner down.
Yeah, Ruffalo's dark about it, but Ruffalo's old now, right? And I don't know what you mean about it, but like Mark Ruffalo's
old now too.
But
yeah, Ed Norton doesn't
look that old. You know,
yeah, Mark Ruffalo just he's looks aged.
Old.
Yeah.
Well, the thing about Ruffalo is that he's much more likable. And there is an edge to Norton's performance as Banner that's not altogether likable. You know, there's that part of him. You're just, I don't know about this guy.
That real life part of him.
I don't know about this guy.
Real life either.
I've always loved Ed Norton on screen. I don't think there's anything that I have not appreciated his performance in.
Yeah, I rewatched that Hulk movie after the first time I saw Captain America: Brave New World. And I forgot how much I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
When I think Hulk movies, I just think the Ang Lee one that I hated.
Yeah.
I like everything about the Ed Norton Hulk movie other than the monster fights. That I just can't bear them. They just look like they're shot in a canyon, and I don't care for that.
Are you talking about the Ed Norton Incredible Hulk monster fights or the Ang
Lee? Yeah.
There's only one monster fight in
and it's like the it's that street fight, and it's too narrow. It's too I just, you know, you've got these, you know, great big monsters, and it just they felt confined by this, artificially confined by the space.
Yeah, and no, that's true. Like, they were in a urban, and they get on top of the building towards the end, but a lot of it, like 80% is down in the down at street level.
Yeah.
But I did love. I'd forgotten about Ed Norton just jumping out of the back of the helicopter, assuming he's going to change into Hulk. And about two thirds of the way down, he gets this panicked look, like, "Oh no!" He just hits the ground. I completely forgotten. It's instant regret right there on his face. Such good acting. And then also, when Iron Man 2 came out and I saw it in the theater, I was not a fan.
It's a rough movie.
Well, you see, I went back and watched as part of this rewatch, and I got to be honest, it was a lot better than I remember. And maybe that's based on
Iron Man 2, you said?
Yeah.
I actually quite like Iron Man 2.
Yeah. And maybe it's because the things that have come afterwards makes it seem better by comparison. Or maybe it's just because when I saw it the first time, I was so, I don't know if upset's the right word, but I was so disillusioned by the fact that Terrence Howard wasn't in it and Don Cheadle was instead. And now at this point, I've seen so many Don Cheadle. You know, Don Cheadle has been James Rhodes so many times, it's normal to see him in that role. Whereas the first time I saw it, it was very jarring to have him there instead of Terrence Howard. Because I love Terrence Howard in the first Iron Man movie, but it was better than I recalled.
Yeah. I will have to at some point rewatch 2 and 3 because I don't remember what happened in each one of them. I remember one of them I thought did a very good job of showing PTSD.
That's more 3 because that was after the Avengers.
I really enjoy 3.
It's funny because I didn't enjoy 3 the first. We saw 3 together
In a row.
We did. Maybe. That's right. And the recliners.
Kidding. I don't find that I enjoy 3 as much on rewatches as I do 2. 2 just has the same feel as 1 to me. So I think I enjoy it from that capacity, you know, upon rewatch. 3, I don't enjoy as much, but, you know, maybe I just need to revisit it. Like, I don't know, you know, when I'll revisit the Marvel movies in chronological order.
It's been interesting.
I've got plenty more time now. I have until next December because Secret Wars isn't coming. It got delayed until next December. So I got time.
I'll let you know if it's worth doing it, but so far it's been fun because some of these early movies, especially, it's been maybe a decade since I last saw them. So it's been fun going back and rewatching the early days of the MCU.
I'll say the one thing that I do want to revisit is what was the first one? There was Endgame was the last one. Oh, Infinity War. That's the one I really want to revisit because it borrowed so much from the Jonathan Hickman Infinity Saga that was being, you know, published right around that time. So I'd really like to revisit that one.
That's where the whole Black Order came from, right?
Yeah, the whole Black Order thing.
Yeah,
but I feel like I haven't seen that one that much. You know, like I've re-seen most Marvel movies, you know, but not Infinity War and Endgame as much, probably because they're so long. So that's one I want to revisit.
This has been your Marvel.
Yeah. you know, since we're talking about big events, it was announced this week that there is an upcoming Marvel-DC crossover, the first in 20 years since the amalgam.
I am so not excited about this.
I am, and I'm not. I
could not begin to tell you how I got excited that you know, it was getting teased, right? There was a big lead up to it, like, big Marvel-DC announcement coming up. Fuck yeah. You know, thinking that another amalgam, but no.
Well, so what we got instead was 2 one-shot specials, one published by DC, one published by Marvel. I don't know which one's published first, but from DC, you get Batman Deadpool, written by Grant Morrison, art by Dan Mora. And from Marvel, you get Deadpool Batman, written by Zeb Wells, art by Greg Capullo. Here's the thing. This specifically, I'm not excited about. I mean, I'll check it out, obviously. It's got superstar artists on both books. I have Morrison issues, but the artists certainly intrigue me. But I'm more hopeful for what it could be indicative of.
Agreed.
More indicative of a series of them.
Yeah. you know, yeah, that we could see more team ups.
I want there to be other crossovers. I would hate if it becomes a Deadpool teams with Superman, Deadpool teams with whatever.
Oh yeah, I hope that's not what we're dealing with. That I would not care for.
I mean, I don't hate Deadpool. I love the Ryan Reynolds Deadpool, but that's just not the crossovers I care to have. I want crossovers with more serious heroes.
Yeah, I just don't want a zany, you know, Deadpool makes jokes at Batman the entire thing. I want to see something interesting.
You know, the problem is every crossover I can think of that I want to see, it features Batman. I want a sequel to Daredevil Batman and Punisher Batman and Spider-Man Batman. I'm like, oh.
You know, it's each of the companies giving us their biggest hero, you know, their most marketable hero. And so there you go. But I would love for them to time it with, okay, you know, you've got, you know, your two big franchise films. You got your Fantastic Four, you got your Superman. Let's do that in the comic, not have it be a movie tie-in, but just align it, have that synergy, you know, so you could do something next year with, you know, Avengers and Superman or Avengers and Justice League. I think there's other opportunities to seize on that.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the original Fantastic Four Superman crossover.
Yeah.
I recently reread the Spider-Man Superman crossovers, and those are still fun.
I mean, you know, the ones I referenced, like the Spider-Man... the Spider-Man Batman one with the Mark Bagley art was one of my favorites. And the Daredevil Batman one. Punisher Batman with the John Romita Jr.
Yes.
Punisher Batman is my favorite of the crossover.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Just seeing Punisher go after Joker and Batman letting him give him one punch.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I want the whole universe amalgam, you know, sequel crossover thing. I certainly want that too. But I'm fine if we get... if that's next summer and we get a series of one shots leading up to it like this, I'd be more than fine with that. Just, you know, but hopefully this isn't it. It is basically what I'm saying.
Have they ever done X-Men Teen Titans?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. That was with Walt Simonson back in the 80s. And it's a beautiful book.
Yeah.
That one's hard to find. Yeah. I mean, they're all hard to find, right?
Right.
Well, that one get is one of the hardest.
You can spend $100 and get it in the, you know, amalgam, the DC Marvel Omnibus. It's in there.
Oh, is it in that one?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
All of them are in there.
It's one that is heavily reprinted. They've done it a couple times over the years.
Hmm. I tell you what, I had the first edition of that, and I wore the cover off of it. I read that thing so much. It was so good. It was so good. And the artwork's just gorgeous. And it was in that period where X-Men and Teen Titans were at the top. You know, you had X-Men written and drawn, Chris Claremont, John Byrne, Terry Austin. You had the Teen Titans written by Marv Wolfman, drawn by George Perez. I mean, you could not have had two bigger super teams at the time. And, you know, to bring in Walt Simonson to draw it, who was, I think this was just prior to his big Thor work. It was just stupendous.
Well, speaking of beautiful books, you know, this week Absolute Wonder Woman came out.
Yes. It's a brand new arc, Paul.
It is. So this is the, you know, so we had the first five issue arc, then issue 6 and 7 were their own thing which also featured beautiful art. But now the original artist Hayden Sherman is back on the book. Kelly Thompson's still writing, and, you know, we're kind of getting the start of what comes, you know, what came after the big events of the first arc. And, you know, you've got, Wonder Woman's whole cast of characters. So you've got Steve Trevor, you've got Barbara Minerva, you know, a couple of other characters, and kind of what comes next. I love this book.
Yeah, it's a good book.
It is such a good, well-drawn, you know, book. You know, it brought in Dr. Poison into the arc, which is not a character I've really had any interest in, even though that was the villain in the first Wonder Woman movie, too.
Did you immediately check to see if Dr. Poison was in your MCO network, your managed care network, Paul?
I did. And they are not, unfortunately.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, buddy.
I can't get me some of that sweet, sweet, you know, poison.
Yeah. Dr. Poison is my primary care practitioner.
I hear he's wonderful. I hear he does house calls.
Uh-huh.
That's amazing this day and age.
Yeah.
Well, he sends little robots that put out a death call. So the death noise that makes you want to kill yourself. So there's that.
I just really love how the book is constructed. You know, it is so beautifully put together and so thought out. I mean, I feel like, what's the artist's name again?
Hayden Sherman.
Yeah, Hayden Sherman. I feel like he lays down 22 pages of paper in front of him, you know, and then just steps back and begins constructing the book, as opposed to working in, you know, one or two page, you know, clusters of images. I mean, I feel like it's just a broader landscape that he's creating across the book. And it just pieces together so beautifully. I love the way that the story unfolds in his artwork.
Yeah, agreed. And, you know, this is, you know, so all of the Ultimate books Absolute books are going into their second arcs. And they all kind of had like a first arc, then they had a mini arc, and now they're going into their second arc. So I'm kind of excited to see if they maintain the same level of quality as the first arcs, because both of them, all of them had like these, you know, their first arc, then they had like this two issue thing. Like Absolute Batman had one about Mr. Freeze. Superman had the one about Brainiac. And, you know, Wonder Woman had the one with like the multiple stories. And those were all good, but I'm curious, you know, to see if the second arc still maintains the level of quality. And, you know, obviously DC's still kind of hyping that they're building to something. In fact, I think there is an event book or something's coming up later on this year called Legacy of Darkseid. And then, you know, it's just, I'm sorry.
Go ahead. I thought that was part of the main,
You're right. That's part of the main Superman book. But then they show that something is in fall, also featuring Darkseid. I'm wondering what they're building, you know, if they're building up to a large crossover coming later this year.
They have the timeline in one of the back of the books this week.
Oh, they do. Okay.
Of the upcoming things.
But it's not the Absolute book.
Yeah, it's not the Absolute book.
So no, it's not the Absolute book.
Okay. Yeah, so I didn't see that. But yeah, so we'll see. You know, I'm looking forward to seeing what's next.
Yeah, I think this is issue 8's a great jumping on point if you didn't get into Absolute Wonder Woman in the initial story run. This is a good place to jump in. I think this issue is new reader friendly. I think it gives you enough of the backstory so that you understand what's going on. And I just think it's a good place. So, you know, if you haven't been in on Absolute Wonder Woman and you want to jump in, issue 8's your place. Or, you know, buy the first volume and trade.
Yeah, I also recommend it.
Yeah.
But Wayne, you had a pretty visceral reaction when we mentioned Superman number 26. You're like, I have words.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the last story arc of Superman leading up to like 25. I enjoyed the, you know, Mercy going evil and like all of that. I was really enjoying that. And I hated this issue. I hate the red kryptonite poisoning. We finally get the answer for why Superman is having issues like the red, what they call it, going code red or whatever. It goes back to the storyline I didn't care about, which was the Lex Luthor's villains.
Yeah, the Dr. Pharma stuff.
Yeah. It's just like I had been really enjoying the story up until this issue, and I hated this. I enjoyed the stuff with like some of the conversation stuff. I enjoyed Lena and Lex talking. I enjoyed, you know, everything that Lois had in this issue. It was cool to see the little cutover to Zod. I expected him to mysteriously get his powers back during it, but yeah, I was so disappointed.
Does anybody else feel like Lena was a little overacting, a little overdramatic?
I felt that way about a lot of this book. You know, I think for me, my issue with this book, and I didn't hate this issue like you did, Wayne. What frustrated me about this issue, and this is crazy from a 45-year-old man on a comic book podcast, is just the desire for everything to go back to status quo at some point in a comic book. In a comic run, right? And I know I've been reading comics for 40 years of my life. That's kind of the point. But like, this book was literally just like, let's work on making everything back to status quo. Everything that has progressed over the last 25 years, Lois Lane's powers, Lex Luthor becoming a good guy, Mercy becoming a good person, Lena Luthor, you know, coming back into their lives, blah, you know, Supergirl, blah, not Supergirl, no, the I forgot the character. But you know, like all these things, and I'm like, it kind of feels like this is just like everyone being sad, but everything moving back to status quo, which I, you know, I had liked the evolution of some of these characters, you know, and of the book. I like when things move forward, even if it's baby steps in comic books, but it feels like this was just like, let's take everything a step back to basically the way it was in issue one again. And I don't love that.
I agree. I hate that Lena went to Midvale, because I am not reading that Supergirl book. It's terrible. Yeah. I like Lena.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Lena too. But like you said, I'm not picking up that Supergirl book either. I dislike the journey we're on with Superman right now, because to your point, you know, it seems like it's, you know, one step forward, two steps back, you know, with everything around Superman these days. And I feel like a lot of this is we're positioning for the anticipated new readership this summer with the James Gunn movie coming out. And I get that, but boy, you know, I like to see the story advance. I like to see the changes in characters. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it feels like, and yeah, I complained about this just a week or so ago, I feel like, but, you know, every time we get new writers, we reset and we, you know, get new volumes of the book instead of people coming in and, you know, picking up the ball and running with the story like we used to do. And that's what I'd really like to go back to. If we're going to reset the status quo, let's go back to that and, you know, tell the ongoing legend of these characters, as opposed to reimagining the character every time the creative changes. I find it super frustrating.
And really, after what Mercy did, how is Mercy still there in charge of Supercorp? And as it made no sense.
Yeah, so
I liked the cover. I think the cover's pretty for this book.
Yeah, cover's pretty, and I will happily eat crow if, you know, something better happens in the next issue. But this issue didn't. It felt like a step back for sure.
I just don't think I'm satisfied with where we are in any of the, you know, main continuity Superman books right now.
Yeah, and like we were just talking about Superman Unlimited last week, right? And it just it didn't grab any of us.
Yeah.
See, I love Superman Unlimited overall. I've been really enjoying it. It was the last issue was kind of a standout because I didn't enjoy it.
Wait, Superman Unlimited is the Dan Slott book that we talked about last week.
Yeah, that was issue one.
I was thinking Absolute Superman because I'm really enjoying Absolute Superman.
Oh, yeah, that Absolute. One's yeah, no, I'm just talking about the main continuity stuff, and I'm sure there's a term for that within DC, but I can't think of what it is right now. Yeah, I keep wanting to say the DC 616, but
Earth Zero. I don't know.
Main continuity, as in temporary, will be reset soon.
That's correct. Yeah.
Yeah. So we'll see. We'll see where Superman goes. You know, they're building to this legacy of Darkseid storyline. So, I mean, I'm still in. I just didn't care for.
But, you know, I'm worried about that, Paul. You know, I'm worried about that because that storyline does look cool, right? But my concern about it is all the groundwork is laid down in inferior books. I'm not enjoying Justice League Unlimited. I think that storyline has been really pretty lame. You know, all the books around it, you know, the Superman book, the other books. I mean, the only reason I think that Batman and Detective are good books is that they really haven't linked into that storyline as much. But the books that they rolled out with it, like the Green Lantern books and whatnot, have just been crap in my opinion. And so I've got deep concerns about what looks like a very promising, you know, series of stories. I'm not sure they're going to be able to. So I'm on record. I'm concerned.
I haven't found it in the comics, but I did find the timeline I was looking at. And it starts with Absolute Power. You have the All-In Special, led into Justice League Unlimited. Right now, we are in the We Are Yesterday era, which is a Justice League Unlimited World's Finest crossover.
Now, I will say, I did start reading that. I'm behind because we talk about it on the podcast. But I read the first two issues, and I really enjoyed it. So I'm going to finish it just to see, you know, if I continue to enjoy it. But it is, I'm enjoying that part.
I say that leads into July to September is Legion of Darkseid throughout the Superman books. And then fall 2025 is the big Darkseid crossover.
All right. Well, we shall see.
I read that new Mr. Terrific book this week. And like everything else that's been a new first issue from DC that's not an absolute book lately, it also was underwhelming.
That's a bummer. Good
to know. I'm glad
you were the canary in the coal mine on that one.
The artwork wasn't bad, but it's just, I'm like, ugh, come on, man. Move this along.
You know, the sad thing is, just like a month or two ago, I would have said that Batman and Superman are in a great place. I was loving Detective Comics. I loved the Superman books at that time. It doesn't last.
Well, Wayne, you and I are speaking of crossovers, we are reading Predator versus Spider-Man. And we had some we really liked issue one. Lots of gore, surprising amount of gore. And issue two has come out, and I'm very curious to hear your thoughts.
This is such a visceral book. The level of gore is still there and shocking. But, I mean, they've done the smart thing, and they're building up to it. And that's Kraven the Hunter versus Predator. Kraven has found the trail, and now he realizes Spider-Man's on the trail. So it's not just a hunt. Now it's a race to see which will get there first. And now we've got a whole nother hunting party of predators that are after this one because doesn't hunt with honor. The book is so visceral and I love it. It is a dark Spider-Man story, but like Spider-Man is still Spider-Man. He's still Peter. You don't have to go dark with him. You just have to have him deal with what he's seeing. I loved having the detective on charge of the case was able to track down Peter as the person that was at the crime scene taking photos. And coming to question him because he contaminated her crime scene.
I think this book is excellent. And, you know, to your point, it is surprisingly gory. I mean, it is gorier than the Predator movie. don't get me wrong. The Predator movie has, you know, your skinned bodies and stuff like that. But at no point in the Predator movie was the Predator wearing someone else's flesh as their skin and then tearing it off, with all the appropriate gore. Characters are really going to be traumatized coming out of this book, but it is so, I think that, especially because of the Kraven stuff to it, I think the biggest praise I could give it is that it feels like, you know, that prime J.M. DeMatteis, Spider-Man stuff when Kraven's Last Hunt came out. It has that dark Spider-Man book feel that you don't see very often because writers tend to basically just write Spider-Man as less violent Deadpool a lot nowadays, just constant quips and cheeriness. But this definitely leans into some of the dark stuff that they were doing back in the, you know, late 80s, early 90s. And I'm all for it.
What I love is the build. Like, I would have expected this to be Spider-Man runs into Predator and they fight and you have big superhero fight and Predator gets away, then they fight again later. And this isn't a big fight book. This is a lot of tracking and things like that. It is building to the fight. When we get to it, the fight is going to be the payoff instead of being a bunch of fights here and there. Like in Wolverine, Predator was a series. It was Wolverine and Predator fighting every issue. And that worked great for the Wolverine character. For these characters, building up to that confrontation, I think is a better way to go.
Yeah,
I'm looking forward to the fight.
Yeah, this book is great. Highly recommend if you're not picking it up. And Andrew?
Yes, sir.
Did you read G.I. Joe issue 7 this week?
I did. You know, Beachhead is one of my favorite characters from back in the olden days. So I was super excited last month when he was on the cover of issue 7. And I got to say, this is basically an all Beachhead episode issue where we get to really learn more about him and how he works. I loved it. I love how they're setting up two different teams. So eventually they're going to have a reckoning between Flint and Duke.
Yes.
So no, I loved pretty much every page. I love seeing Major Blood. I can't say enough good things about it. What did you think, though?
I thought this book was great. You know, so they kind of like the Absolute books that we were talking about. This is an in-between. I don't know if it's a one-shot. You know, they kind of refer... Actually, it's not, because I think they said... They've got another side story focused on the Baroness and I don't remember Baroness and someone else. Oh, and Cover Girl in the next issue. So, you know, we're kind of doing some of these side stories, you know, a little break from the main arc, probably to give the main artist time to get ahead. But
well, and Duke needs to heal. Duke has some injuries from his battle with Cobra Commander, that epic battle. So he needs to spend. He's not going to recover in 2 weeks, guys. He's not Hawkeye.
It only takes like 2 weeks.
No, he's not Hawkeye.
It's going to take him 10 days. It's 10 days tops. Yeah.
Good luck.
10 days.
And then he's out. Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm enjoying, because I'm also very curious to learn more about this new Baroness, because she's obviously very different than the historical Baroness, or at least we're led to believe she is. Maybe it's all.
Yeah, she's starting that way.
Yeah. Maybe it's all an act. Maybe she's really just deep cover for Cobra. But no, I'm just loving to get to see some of these other characters in more depth and detail.
Yeah, they say this is the first of a few standalone issues that they'll be doing in their run on G.I. Joe. Sometimes they'll introduce new characters or to spotlight a particular story. They'll never feel like filler, and they'll always matter to the uber narrative they're telling in G.I. Joe. And so, you know, this one kind of sets up Night Force. You know, you've got Flint and, you know, it's kind of setting up this new brigade. And, you know, I like that Beachhead is pre-teacher Beachhead.
Yeah.
He actually makes a couple of references to it. Like, if you're an old school G.I. Joe fan, you know, Beachhead spent so much of his time as a teacher, right? A mentor.
Instructor, yeah.
Yeah. And this, he's still very much active in the field and trying to make himself relevant so he's not relegated to become an instructor.
Well, we've seen, you know, we saw Flint and Lady J once before. I think they had their helmets on. Remember, they staged that attack, kind of a false flag attack, in the Duke series, right?
That's right.
Yeah. And then, so I think this is the first time we've seen them back on the page, though, since then. So, yeah, I'm so excited to see where it's going. Book that I'm reading right now, and it's probably going to be my book of the year unless something crazy happens in the next 6 months, but I just love it so much.
I'm so excited about this book. I'm so excited about what they're building to, and they're really taking their time in both of these books, but in a good way, right? Like, I'm anxious because I know what I want to see, but like, I'm enjoying what I'm reading and I'm willing to go for the ride.
Yeah, I hope they find a good balance between, you know, giving the story room to breathe, giving us time to learn more about the different characters, but not get too depressed, not get too lost in doing other things. But we'll see if they manage to navigate that well. But yeah, I'm looking forward to issue 8 and continuing to see what's in store next.
Yeah. And, you know, if you do want to catch up on the G.I. Joe book because you're behind or whatever, the first arc of G.I. Joe will be collected in trade paperback next week.
Hey, Paul.
Yes, sir.
What else is coming out next week?
Well, a couple of interesting books, Aaron. Well, from DC Comics, we have the start of the second arc in Absolute Superman. Absolute Superman issue 8 kicks off the second arc. You know, like what I just said, we had a fill-in issue focused on Brainiac. Now we're getting into the second arc featuring the original creative team. Also from DC Comics, we get Justice League versus Godzilla versus Kong, Part 2, Issue 1.
I'm very excited.
I think we enjoyed the first series for the most part. It ended a little lukewarm, but at the same time, I mean, they probably knew this sequel was coming, and so they'll just continue here.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I overall enjoyed the first one.
Yeah, same. And from Marvel, there's actually a couple of.
Did you guys see the preview pages for it this week?
I did. It looks great.
Yep, yeah. They make King Shark into a kaiju, and he's going to fight Godzilla.
As you should.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to be big, you might as well fight Godzilla.
They just how to make that series fun.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And I did not, I saw the preview pages, but I did not read them because I knew I was going to read the book, and I didn't want to read
it. I just eyeballed the art, and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm down.
Yeah, I'm down.
Yeah.
Marvel has a couple of big releases this week. The first one being Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion. You know, so this is where the original Ultimate Spider-Man, Miles Morales, interacts with the new Ultimate Universe. So it's a first of a 5-issue series. But this is, again, Miles Morales in the new Ultimate Universe. Also, the first issue of Imperial, which is the new Jonathan Hickman cosmic event book. Imperial features Hulks, Black Panthers, Novas, Guardians, Cosmic Kings and Queens.
I'm super excited for this.
That's
yeah.
I mean, I'm sure if anyone can write cosmic books good, It's It's Jonathan Hickman.
That's right. That's right. Chubby right now.
And also from Marvel Comics, Marvel Knights, The World to Come, which is teams, is a Marvel Knights book celebrating the 25th anniversary of Marvel Knights, set in the future of the Marvel Universe, written by Christopher Priest with art by Joe Quesada.
Oh my God, they got Joe back.
They got Joe what a back. Deal. If the King of Wakanda is dead, leaving unguarded the world's most advanced technology, most precious metal, and a cryptic vault of dark secrets while triggering global conflicts among Marvel's heroes, villains, and mutants. With T'Challa gone, the future of the Marvel 616 universe will be determined by a final tribal challenge for the Wakandan throne and the mysterious victor who will change Wakanda and the Marvel universe forever. So, I mean, I'm going to buy it just for the Joe Quesada art. I mean, that dude, I haven't seen him draw anything in years. So I'm all in on that first issue.
Yep. It could be a good thing or a bad thing.
I'm looking forward to it. I choose to believe this is going to be the thing that completes me.
We haven't seen someone draw for many years. You wonder if they're still going to have the same quality they had before.
Well, the preview pages look good. Yeah, clearly.
Oh, okay. Dominantly. All right.
Well, and, you know, Christopher Priest, I mean, his arc on Black Panther is one of my favorites.
Oh, yeah, so. Same. Yeah, love Christopher Priest.
All right.
Well, all excellent. Well, it sounds like a great week next week. Hey, we want to know what you thought about this week's books. Which DC books do you hate? Because we'd like to know. Give us a shout at theideologyofmadness@gmail.com. And if we use your comments on the show, you could win a coveted, valuable Ideology of Madness surprise.
You can also hit us up at IOM Geek on Instagram, Twitter. I don't know. I'm all thrown off. You can also hit us up at IOM Geek on Facebook, Instagram, and X.
Very good. Well, hey, guys, let's do this all over again next week. And I cannot wait to talk about the new King Kong Godzilla book. Can't wait.
And the Imperial. That's a big one for me.
Oh, so. Yeah. Imperial's going to be great.
True.
Yeah. Very excited.
Catch you then.
Bye.
See ya.
Podcast theme music graciously provided by Mark Andrew Pope. For more information, visit markandrewpope.com. Funny Books with Aaron and Polly is a production of ideologyofmadness.com. No Spider-Man clones were harmed in the production of this podcast.